Welcome to Book Bumble, the podcast for people who love to read. In each episode, we'll introduce a stack of books that are tied together with a common connection to help take a deeper dive into each story.
We provide a space to talk books that is friendly and deep with a little hint of geek.
I'm Laura Pleasance.
And I'm Leslie Hopping.
And we are two friends who love spending time with our families, visiting libraries, and reading great books.
We are so happy you joined us. Let's get started. Hi, Laura. Welcome, everyone.
This is episode 28. Today, our stack of books is tied together with the common theme of being backlist books from trusted authors. So, you know, like when you're in a reading slump or you just aren't sure what to read next, which happens to me a lot. If you dig into a backlist, it's really rewarding.
Yes, and you can kind of know, like, oh, I know I'm going to like this book.
Yes.
It'll get me out of that slump.
Yeah. So what book do you want to start us off with?
Well, I would like to start with What Alice Forgot by Leanne Moriarty.
I would say Moriarty.
Moriarty. Okay. This book came out in 2009, and I read it because I had read Apples Never Fall. Have you read that one?
I have.
And Nine Perfect Strangers.
That one I have not read.
And I enjoyed them both so much. I actually like Nine Perfect Strangers a little bit more than Apples Never Fall.
Okay.
So that's one you could try out. She also wrote Big Little Lies, which turned into a show, I think, on HBO.
Yeah. Love it.
Did you watch it?
Mm-hmm. I did.
But here's the starting point for this winner, What Alice Forgot. 39-year-old Alice comes to after a traumatic head injury and has forgotten the last 10 years of her life. Her most recent memories are that she's 29, totally and madly in love with her husband, and about 3 months pregnant. But when she comes to, she's 39, separated from her husband, Nick, and has three children, fourth grade, third grade, and a kindergartner.
That's a rude wake up.
That is a rude wake up. I can't imagine thinking I was pregnant and then waking up. That must be traumatic in and of itself. Alice and her sister, Elizabeth, aren't as close as they had been in her memories that she remembers. But Elizabeth comes to the hospital to pick her up and take her home. But even her home is not really recognizable. Her room has nothing of her life with her husband, Nick, and she even has flowers in a vase from a new boyfriend. Alice can't seem to get her mind around this new reality, so when Nick brings the kids over to see her, she invites him to stay for dinner because her mindset, she's in a very different place. She just isn't willing to give up what she remembers so vividly. As time goes on, she supports her sister with her sister's pregnancy issues, tries to work with Nick to help their children, who she sees have clearly been affected by their separation. Alice desperately wants to go back to her latest memories, not the reality of what has happened to her life and her family. So she decides to fight for it instead. This is really a wonderful story of family, forgiveness, and whether or not it's possible to start over or to start fresh. And can you kind of get back what you lost? Which is a really interesting premise because in her Alice's mind, she didn't lose any of it.
Right.
I think it feels easier for her to fight for it because it was never lost for her. But she herself is watching Nick, who is very angry and very rude to her, and she's watching her kids, and her oldest, her fourth grader, who she had been pregnant with, can tell that she doesn't remember them.
That would be so hard.
The other two are too really young to realize it, but the fourth grader realizes. So this author is just a winner. Every book I've read by her, she really is able to write about human relationships that are raw and real, which we're both suckers for. She can take very serious and hard situations and find a way to make them hopeful. Like, I kind of saw this book as a, you know, you lost yourself and you want to get it back. And she kind of made that happen through losing 10 years of your memory.
Yeah, it's unbelievable.
I really did love this look into motherhood and being a wife. It's almost a reflection, I felt, my opinion, on how real life can be hard on relationships. And Alice and Nick seem to have gotten bogged down mm-hmm. by their lives, and they lost sight of their love for each other. Mm-hmm. And her injury kind of allowed her to let it all go and actually start back when things were hopeful and mm-hmm. easier. So she was able to kind of use that to help reform the relationship she mm-hmm. had with her husband. I also really enjoyed the secondary character, Franny, Alice's honorary grandma. There's a lot that happens with Nick and the kids because of side stories with Franny. So she's one of those characters I think people will really love or love not loving.
Okay.
You know, those mm-hmm. kind of characters.
Right.
This is the story of what you can become if you lose yourself. It's the story of finding the self you want to build. It's a story about fighting for what you want most, what you feel is more important than parent groups and making sure you look the way you're supposed to look and mm-hmm. everyone else looks around you. If you want some great family stories from a depth you can expect in each story from a seasoned writer, check out What Alice Forgot and other Leanne
Moriarty
novels.
Moriarty. That's a tongue twister for you.
It is. I'm really sorry. Mm-hmm.
No, it's okay.
Moriarty.
There, you got it.
I
agree. I think, you know, her backlist is amazing. Mm-hmm. And I love her books as well.
Yes.
So I'm glad you brought that one.
Yeah,
I read that one too.
Yeah.
But I kind of forgot that I read it.
Oh,
going
how
along
fitting.
With the, right, going along with the title. Okay. I read every last one by Anna Quindlen. It was published in 2010.
So
we're going back. We just featured her newest novel, mm-hmm. After Annie, in our recent Lost and Found episode and loved it so much. And I've read quite a few in her backlist. I also used to read her columns when she was a columnist. Mm-hmm. And you really just cannot go wrong with any. She is, for me, like Ann Tyler or Ethan mm-hmm. Joella, as far as I know I'm going to love mm-hmm. whatever she writes.
Yeah.
Every last one is a gut punch of an amazing read, and I think you just got it from the library. So mm-hmm. listen to what I'm going to say about it,
okay.
And then I won't do any spoilers. So here's the starting point. Mary Beth Latham is happily married to Glenn, and she's a mother to three teens, Ruby, who's the eldest, and then twins, fraternal twins, Alex and Max. She's devoted to her family. That's her whole thing. And when Ruby decides to distance herself from her boyfriend, Kiernan, Mary Beth is worried because Kiernan has been a part of Ruby's life and their family's life since he was a little boy.
Mm.
He has a place at their table. But Mary Beth becomes distracted when she realizes that one of her twins, Max, is depressed and struggling. So when a tragedy befalls the family, Mary Beth has to find a way through for everyone. That's my synopsis.
Okay.
So this does have some darker themes surrounding the tragedy. So just know that going in if you're triggered by that. But saying that, this is a great, great read. The theme of what it takes to be a mother is prominent in the story, kind of going with what you were just saying. Everything from really seeing the differences in your children and accepting them for who they are, not what you want them to be or who you want them to be. That's a big thing when kids are teens.
Right.
Yeah. Because you're starting to realize they're going to be who they're going to be.
Mm-hmm.
It also kind of examines the work it takes, both physically and emotionally, to be a mother. And then the little and big joys, and all of it is covered in this book.
Mm-hmm.
So I really like the friendship motif of the book. Mary Beth has some huge changes to friendships after this tragic event. And some of them are positive and some of them are negative. And there are unexpected mercies from friends and also really awkward moments that are going to define her relationships going forward. And this feels real to me as well. It also applies to some of the family relationships in the book too. I think that Anna Quinlan just has a way of writing about ordinary people that makes you feel connected and kind of as if you know them. Mm-hmm. I think because she writes about real feelings that everyone has, that makes the characters relatable. It feels like these people could live next door to you or across the street from you or even be you. And that's a really hallmark of her writing, is taking regular people and making them deeply, deeply sympathetic. I especially liked, in this book, the personalities of the kids. Ruby was a poet. She was a senior in high school. She's self-confident, and she has a flair for quirky fashion. Alex, one of the twins, is athletic, and he's really embarrassed by his twin. Which I enjoyed reading about that. You know, a lot of books about twins, they're just so connected. So right. I think that could, you know, would be real.
Yeah.
Max, the other twin, is a drummer, and he really is a square peg trying to fit in all of these round holes. If you're a mom of a teen, you will have a lot of empathy for Max. Mary Beth works so hard to know her children, but Anna Quinlan does such a good job showing us that mothers can never truly know everything about their children's lives. And I think there are things about her children that she doesn't want to know. Mm-hmm. So she sometimes pushes those aside or kind of glosses over them because they might be too hard to accept or to think about.
Yeah.
After the act of violence, Mary Beth has to try to move on and protect what is left. So we see how this aftermath takes over and threatens everything. So this is kind of like the second half of the book. This is a really heartbreaking part of the book, but it's also where the real character growth and development takes place, and not just for Mary Beth. There's a lot of things revealed in this section of the narrative, and it's very complex and layered, especially about how the family tragedy unfolded. There was one particular choice that Mary Beth made in the past that was especially hard to read about and kind of hit me out of the blue. But again, Anna Quinlan just infuses her characters with the good, the bad, and the ugly of what it means to be human. And it kind of goes back to that, again, like you never know what other people are carrying. Their life might seem so perfect. And Mary Beth struggles a lot with guilt and wondering what if, which would be natural after some kind of a tragedy like this. It's a weighty subject matter and something that I cannot imagine happening. But there's hope. And what happened can't be changed, but you get the sense that life is going to continue in a different way now. There's going to be a new rhythm that no one wanted, but that also does have some gifts. So that's Every Last One by Anna Quinlan. And it shows, to me, this book shows that delving into a beloved author's backlist can be very, very satisfying.
Yeah, because you didn't necessarily know this book existed.
No, I didn't at all.
And I've just been staring at you the whole time because I want to ask you all kinds of questions, but I don't want...
I'm not going to answer them.
No, because it could read your face if you were trying to hide something.
Well, I could put up like a piece of cardboard.
Well, I'm excited that I have this one.
Good.
You'll find me hidden in the on our rainy day tomorrow, hopefully.
Okay, I can't wait to hear what you think.
So before we get to another book from our stack, we really want to share our great experience with Book of the Month. They made it super easy to decide what to read next. It can be really overwhelming to look at lists of new releases. We do it all the time. And we love it, don't get us wrong. But Book of the Month offers just the right amount of books to select from. We got to choose from a pretty amazing book list with a variety of genres, some by authors we've heard of and some what turns out to be great debuts.
Right. And all of the titles on their list sounded so, so good. And we each made a great selection. Mm-hmm. And we were both drawn to different genres. Yeah. So that makes it exciting for us to talk about mm-hmm. and trade books.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. We get the benefit of being able to read each other's too.
I can't wait. So I chose All We Were Promised by Ashton Lattimore. And it's a historical fiction pick. And I was so intrigued because it's the story of a housemaid with a very dangerous family secret who conspires with a wealthy young abolitionist to help an enslaved girl escape in pre-Civil War Philadelphia.
And I just heard someone talking about the fact that they just opened up their beautiful blue box and had that
book. Was in it.
Yes, yep. And yay. I was excited to tell them that you loved it.
I did.
I chose The Reappearance of Rachel Price by Holly Jackson. This one's a mystery thriller, and it follows this teen searching for the truth about her mother's shocking disappearance and even more shocking reappearance while they're filming a true crime documentary. Just the book list itself is so well curated. They have an editorial team that reads through hundreds of new release fiction, and it's so nice that they do that because then they just choose a list of the best books by the new and upcoming authors, which makes it easier for us to pick the ones we want to read.
Yeah, and it's so fun. I love that we could get these brand new hardcovers mm-hmm. delivered to us with free shipping. And then you can use the app for reading challenges with rewards and to keep track of reading progress. Mm-hmm. And there's a bunch of fun little surprises along the way. And using the app is like getting just a little burst of dopamine.
Yes.
Yeah.
And we are just super excited to see the latest new releases at the start of each mm-hmm. month. You can try Book of the Month 2 this month. It's easy peasy. Simply use the code PASTEL. And you can get your first book in hardcover or audio for only $5. Mm-hmm. Again, use the code PASTEL and get your first book for only $5 at bookofthemonth.com.
Okay. Do you have another book to share?
I do.
Backlister?
I literally just closed the last page of this book before recording today.
Okay.
I was kind of ignoring the rest of the household duties mm-hmm. and reading
finishing
between
up.
Games. Yes. It's The Stolen Marriage by Diane Chamberlain, and it came out in 2017.
Oh, my gosh. I love Diane Chamberlain.
Oh, she's just another one that oh. every book I have picked up by her is fantastic.
I am excited about this. Okay.
You haven't read this one, then?
I don't know.
Okay. Well, listen okay. and see. I got interested in Diane Chamberlain after reading The Last House on the Street from mm-hmm. 2022, yep. most recently. And I still want to read The Secret Life of C.C. Wilkes. Mm-hmm. I have not read that one. I heard it's really good, though. So here's the starting point for The Stolen Marriage. It's 1944 in Baltimore, Maryland. And Tess DeMello is engaged to the love of her life, her childhood best friend, Vincent. He's a doctor, and she's finishing up her degree to be an RN. They want to open a pediatric practice together and okay. work together forever. They're planning their wedding, and their families are neighbors in Little Italy and support each other in every way. While Vincent is in Chicago helping at a clinic because of the recent polio outbreak, she and her best friend Gina decide to go to Washington, D.C. to have, like, just a little girls' weekend.
Okay.
They're staying at Gina's aunt's, they call it a traveling house, but it's like a boarding house. I think of it, like, as an Airbnb.
Okay.
In today's world. But Gina's aunt had to go out of town, so she's not there. It's just these two, it's just Tess and Gina, and then there are two male boarders there that weekend as well. Through a surprising evening and a string of events, Tess finds herself pregnant and unable to be dishonest with Vincent, her fiancé. So she decides to break off their engagement.
Okay.
She decides she can't be unfaithful or lie to him. Mm-hmm. So she just wants to go off and start her own life and take care of the baby. With nowhere to go, though, she decides to go to the baby's father for help and ends up agreeing to marry Henry mm-hmm. Kraft and move to Hickory, North Carolina, where she sticks out like a sore thumb. Mm-hmm. She knows from getting to know him in Washington, D.C., that his family owns a furniture company and they're pretty well off. So she doesn't want to expose him, but she does want some money to get started mm-hmm. with a new life. But he thinks it over and decides they should get married. Now, not only do they not have many Italians in Hickory, they're, you know, but she has not lived with money, and the Crafts have a lot of it. Mm. So that's a hard transition for her. But right away, she knows it's going to be really hard to just find her place, not only in that house, but everywhere. Her new mother-in-law and sister-in-law literally hate her already when she walks in the door. And there are too many secrets to count in her new husband's life. Mm. So it was always supposed that he was going to marry this other young lady from this other rich family in Hickory. Mm-hmm. They weren't officially engaged, but that was the assumption.
Okay.
And so that was the plan, and everyone really hates that Tess has come in and pushed that plan out the door.
Mm. Poor Tess.
I know. Then polio hits hard, especially near Hickory, North Carolina, and everywhere around there. Tess pushes and pushes her husband until she gets him to allow her to work as a nurse to help, because the Kraft women do not work.
Okay.
It's below them. But she finally talks him into it, and the town of Hickory comes together in 54 hours and turns a summer camp into a polio hospital for mostly children.
Okay.
The town cooks meals and gives up valuable rations and household items during a very unsettled time to create a place that ended up saving hundreds of people. The awesome thing is that that place in Hickory actually existed. Mm. The town did come together in that many hours. It was featured in Life magazine.
Wow.
So Diane Chamberlain did so much research and created Tess's story around this event to bring it to life.
That's awesome.
Which I think is so cool.
Which she does in her books.
Yes. She takes something mm-hmm. and then builds the characters around it. I always think of authors taking the characters that are in their minds and creating stories.
Right.
But she kind of does the opposite. She has like a thing right. that she wants to present mm-hmm. and creates the people around it. Things I loved about this book in particular. Tess was a tremendous, glorious main character. She is everything you want to see in your main character. Strong, flawed, stretching, and being stretched as a woman whose desires aren't always met with reality. This juxtaposition between Vincent, the person she was engaged to and broke his heart, and Henry, the person that she ended up marrying, is so interesting because as a reader, you're finding her. She doesn't hate Henry. She sees him for the person that he is. Mm-hmm. She just can't quite figure him out. But Vincent, you know, as a reader also, although she's putting him on a pedestal, he's probably not as amazingly wonderful mm-hmm. as she has in her mind right. now that she can't be with him. And they're just very, very different people. And then this deeper story of what the culture is in the South and in the rest of the country in the 1940s mm-hmm. Was very interesting. You have, they have, you know, the African Americans and the whites were separated mm-hmm. and they were working in the house, so like Tess wanted to help serve something and like her mother-in-law slapped it out of her hand mm. because that's not her job. Mm-hmm. They were living in different sections of town, riding the buses together. Everything was just, I sometimes forget that in the 1940s, when all this war was going on, that there was this war here too, right in our country, that was going on, deep-seated, especially in the South. And again, it's an interesting story of coming into a family that you don't really belong in, kind of like a mother where the husband was lost and she went and joined her mother-in-law and just didn't belong there. You have this sense of she's just wandering around. She has all the money she could need, but she has no one that she can depend on. So the family dynamics were written amazingly, including Tessa's mom, who she had to tell, like, hello, I am breaking off my engagement and I am marrying someone else. She didn't want to say that she was pregnant. You know, but that whole break from her family, not just Little Italy, but her actual mother. Was really painful to read about. The dynamics of the medical field at the time, the dynamics of the different cultural groups and churches. You had, like, her coming in and being from Little Italy.
Really they just different. Kept
commenting about how her hair, it made her look like a gypsy, and she just didn't fit in where she was. It was, and that she had come in being Catholic, and they said, no, now you're Baptist, and this kind of dynamic that she was having to deal with. It was just an amazing story of a place and time where we all really read about a lot of World War II stuff in the 40s, obviously. We get another glimpse of the reality back in the States. And this polio outbreak was horrible. They had no idea how to treat it. And all of the wonderful people that came together to try to take care of these people and kids especially that were in pain. So what I love about this author and why I'm working through the backlist is she can craft stories that cover so many genres. It's not a mashup, but more of like an all-around wonderful literary treat that she works on and offers to her readers. If you haven't checked her out, go now. She has a humongous backlist. That was The Stolen Marriage by Diane Chamberlain.
That she does have a huge backlist. I was looking at it while you were talking about The Stolen Marriage, which I've read, but I would need to reread. Big Lies in a Small Town, super good. You Necessary Lies, amazing. The Silent Sister, fabulous.
I haven't
The Midwife's Confession. I mean, she has, I can't even take the time right now to count how many, but she, to me, is, if you like one of her books, you are going to love all of them. I love her.
So check it out. Diane Chamberlain, if you haven't read one of her books, it's time.
That's going to be my next go-to when I'm in a slump.
Oh, good idea. Okay. What do you have?
Oh, my gosh.
I actually know what you have. I'm so excited.
I am super excited about this. So I read Year of Wonders by Geraldine Brooks. It was published in 2001. This is her debut novel. And I just do not know how I have not read this in the past 23 years.
This is what's so amazing, though, about looking back into these authors. A lot of us just move on to new authors.
But this is like a find. So Geraldine Brooks wrote the fabulous novel Horse, which we featured on an earlier episode, which was also wonderful. And we raved about it because it's so, so good. That's her most recent book. But I love this novel even more. And she has a deep backlist to dive into. So her titles include March, which won the Pulitzer Prize and is about the father from Little Women, who, as you know, I hate, but I kind of want to, I want to read this book.
Maybe I'll read it for you and then let you know.
And tell me if I'm still going to hate it. Another title is People of the Book, which I have in my stack of books right now. Caleb's Crossing and The Secret Cord. Plus, she's written a couple of nonfiction titles. So I want to tell you how I found this book. I wanted to dig into her backlist, and I had read about People of the Book, which sounds mm-hmm. right up my alley and sounds so good. So I went to one of the libraries that we frequent, went to her section, and there is this book, Year of Wonders, and I pulled it out, and I was like, oh my gosh, I want to read this too. So that's another, I thought that was fun, is just going to the library and looking at her section and discovering this book. Oh, it just completely blew me away. So the story is set in 1665 to 1666 in this tiny, tiny, tiny village of Eme in England. And it's narrated by the main character, Anna Frith, who is a housemaid at a rectory of the village. When the plague, yes, the Black Plague, comes to the village in some cloth from a visiting tailor, the young minister at the rectory convinces the parishioners to, well, I shouldn't say he convinces them. He encourages them to isolate and quarantine themselves in order to stop the spread of the plague and save their surrounding villages. What?
That's weird.
Isn't that, that sounds so crazy? Uh-huh. And the people didn't know how the plague was spread at the time.
But they were taking care of each other.
I know.
It's awesome.
It's amazing. So over two-thirds of the people of Eme perish in this deadly plague. Oh. Think about that.
Wow.
Two-thirds of the people that you know. Anna finds strength and will and gifts she never knew or wanted through this year as she and the others lose everything they hold dear. Okay, now, I told you how much I love this book, and you said, well, okay, I want to talk about that. You said that I'm a weirdo because I love books about plagues.
And what meme but did I what do. GIF did I send you?
You sent me a weird plague one with people dressed up as...
The plague doctors.
Okay. Okay, so here's the deal. This is about the plague, but it's hopeful and encouraging somehow. And I just love this so much. My hands are going malamint. They're going crazy. Okay, so I was super excited to find this. Mm-hmm. I never even heard about this title.
Yeah.
Knew nothing about it except the author's name. And that is one of the things I love about reading. There's all these treasures waiting to be discovered, and they're never going to run out. Ever. Doesn't that just make you feel good?
Sure.
So the sense of time and place in this book was one of the absolute strongest I've encountered probably ever. I was first going to say in a while, but I think maybe ever.
And not a situation that you would be familiar with.
Not at all.
Right.
Except I have read some books about plagues, but no.
Yeah.
I was completely immersed in this 17th century village. Geraldine Brooks describes the natural world that surrounds them, the structures they inhabit and visit, which, by the way, are very archaic, the food, the smells. I used every sense, and I was really, really fascinated by all of it. The book has this feeling of being closed in because they had chosen to isolate, and it created a lot of atmosphere. The characters in the book devised a way to communicate with other villages. I mean, they had to let the other villages know what they were doing so that no one would come into their village and get needed supplies by leaving things in a rock wall. They carved these like holes, and they would leave things there. And this person, who was called the carter because he brought a cart, would come and leave things and take things out of the rock wall. And then they would stand this huge distance apart and share important information, like basically like yelling out to the person who would come to talk. They would dictate letters that way. That's how they got the news back and forth about what was going on. And they knew that they were keeping the other villages safe.
Yeah.
So that was pretty cool. And it kind of reminded me of COVID quarantine.
Yeah.
The descriptions of these parts when they were getting things from other villages and sharing felt really open and expansive, the way she described the landscape. So it made the village life seem even more close. Hmm. It was incredibly well done and something that I haven't felt before in a book.
Wow.
It was really easy to get lost in the book. So there's a big theme of finding yourself amidst complete catastrophe woven all through this narrative. Anna is married to a lead miner. That's what the people in the village do. And she's mother to these two really little boys. Absolutely nothing fancy about her life. She keeps sheep. She keeps chickens. She had a hard childhood. She and her little family live super simply, and she works really hard. And you can see her resourcefulness and care for others right from the beginning. As the plague decimates their small village, absolutely no one is left untouched. And Anna is forced to do things no one would ever want to do. And because there are so few healthy people, mm-hmm. those that can help have to decide if they're going to help.
Wow.
Anna is able, and she becomes someone that the villagers call on constantly for healing, for caring for the ill, for care of the dead, and for companionship. And I have to say, I really admired her because, as I said, they had no way of knowing how the plague spread.
Right.
So if you're in there helping people that have it, mm-hmm. how do you know you're not going to get
right.
it? So she was extremely empathetic. She steps into all these different roles as needed, but she's not perfect. She's deeply flawed. She's conflicted at times about all of it, but she tries and she does change and grow throughout the... It was just a terrible, horrifying experience. There was one point in the story where Anna refused to bow down to a woman from the one rich family of the area who had chosen to leave. And essentially, they abandoned the villagers.
Hmm.
And Anna realized that living that way, the way they lived before the plague, didn't make sense anymore after everything they had endured.
Yeah.
Another thing that reminded me kind of COVID.
Mm-hmm.
I really like the female friendship aspect of the book. Anna becomes close to another main character named Eleanor, who's the wife of the minister. And Eleanor teaches her to read because she was illiterate, and they learn together about natural remedies. And they use this healing garden of another villager to try to strengthen people.
Okay.
They get the idea that maybe they need to strengthen the people that have remained healthy.
Mm.
So that was really interesting.
Be less susceptible.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Eleanor helps Anna believe in herself and see herself in a whole new way. And even with the difference in like class or station, whatever you might call it, between the two of them, they become close and they become really supportive of one another, sharing a lot of confidences. And one of those is going to change everything for Anna. And it was really interesting to watch Anna, Eleanor, and the minister, Michael, who's married to Eleanor, standing up to various issues and people affecting both the times in the village. So there's a lot of ignorance and hatred of others who seem different, which you always expect in like a 1660
mm-hmm.
book. There are some people accused of being witches. There are some other people that are preying upon the deep fears of the village and victimizing people during this terrible plague. There are people just downright making bad choices and others who are showing their true colors, good or bad. People go to some true extremes dealing with everything. It's super interesting. And these main characters have to choose when and where to stand against things or speak up. And remember, they're quarantined, so they can't get away from these
mm-hmm.
things. It was such a good element to the story, and it made me think about how I do or don't do that in my own life? I mean, are you going to stand against people saying this person is a witch when you know that that could get you accused? Mm-hmm. Or are you just going to have to keep seeing that person over and over? Anyways, a bunch of stuff, not just the witchery stuff, but oh, it's so good. All the characters are really complex and well-developed. So good. The secondary characters are really important to the larger story as well. They kind of carry some other side stories along, and I had a lot of strong feelings about them, kind of like you were talking earlier, where you're either going to love them or you hate them, but you love that you hate them. Yes. You like reading about them.
You're attached to them in some way. That's a great author that can do that.
The prose is gorgeous, and the choice by the author to use the language of the time, super fantastic. It made the story feel so authentic, and it added to the sense of place and time. But here's the interesting thing. It wasn't cumbersome. It didn't come across like a new language you had to learn to understand the book. So she kind of wove it in and out, this kind of like archaic language of ways of saying things. But you never had to stop and be like, what? And it wasn't all like that.
Right.
So it was just a perfect choice. My reading felt smooth and it really flowed. The book is melancholy. It's poignant. It's sad. But it's hopeful in that weird way. And I guess I'm on that train today because those words also fit every last one too. It'd be a great book club discussion. And I recently met someone who had also read it, which we discovered kind of randomly because I had just met her. So I'm looking forward to talking with her about it. It's one of those stories that needs to be discussed. I loved everything about it. If you can't tell, that's Year of Wonders by Geraldine Brooks. Highly recommend this backlist beauty.
And you were trying to decide which of those to read first.
I was. And you said that you would pick the 1666 book. And then I read the back of the blurb on both of them. And that's ultimately what I decided. Mm-hmm. Super good.
I can't wait to hear what you think of the other one, too.
Well, I've got it.
I know. So what do you have in your hand right now?
Okay. Well, I have another good one, really different, called Symphony of Secrets by Brendan Slocum. It was published in 2023. It's a great read. He also wrote The Violin Conspiracy, which for me wasn't as successful, but I really, really got into this one. So here's the starting point. It's got two timelines. In the present, Byrne, the expert on a composer from the past named Frederick Delaney, gets a chance of a lifetime when he's asked to authenticate a newly uncovered piece from Delaney's unfinished magnum opus opera. As he and his techie friend Ebony work on the project, they discover some really unsettling information that Byrne's employers, the Delaney Foundation, some of whom are direct descendants of Frederick Delaney, don't want shared. And then in the past, 1920 to be exact, Frederick Delaney, the composer, is a struggling musician, and he's looking for his big break when he meets Josephine Reed, a musical prodigy living on the streets of New York. She's just a street person. And she's very different, and people don't treat her very nicely. Frederick befriends her and begins to use her talent and gifts to expand the future. So in the present, as Byrne and Ebony discover clues to the truth about the new Delaney piece, things become more complicated and intense than they could have imagined. So this story was super urgent in both the past and the present. It was fast-paced. I loved the way the author wove the two time periods together and made me care about what happened and who got the ultimate credit for the music. You're going to be super invested in that. It's a page-turner, and it dealt with issues of race and gender privilege and power in a really accessible way. I was definitely rooting for Byrne and Ebony in the present and one of the characters in the past.
I heard that.
This book has so much going for it. It's got mystery, intrigue, the 1920s setting, musical scene. It also includes musical performance and publishing, which I never thought I would care about, but I was really into that. I loved the character of Josephine. She was definitely neurodivergent. She was able to see music as color, and she was shunned and dismissed because of her strangeness, even by her own family. She was a musical genius. She's not a real person. Okay. None of these are real people. But she, in the book, she was a musical genius, and the author allowed her to grow and change. She was absolutely my favorite character out of the four.
I feel like we read another book that had someone that could see, I'm going to have to look back, that could see music
as color. Or something in color.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because we looked up the
term. I think that's a real thing. Mm-hmm. Echo of Old Books.
Yes.
And it wasn't just music. Echo of Old Books by Barbara Davis.
Yes.
Okay.
Boom.
Cool. Okay. Good remembering. Thanks. So if you like two time period stories, if you like a historical mystery story with a lot of secrets and some thrills along the way, check it out. Symphony of Secrets by Brendan Slocum.
Sounds so good. Thanks.
So glad you joined us today. If you'd like some other titles that go along with this theme, check out our show notes from today's episode.
Please share this episode with a friend and check us out on Instagram at The Book Bumble. We'd love it if you would subscribe to our podcast. Join us next time with a new bundle of wonderful reads.
Until next time.